to the Extra Magic Hour, a Disney Parks podcast. Here are your hosts, Anne Ravanos and Dimitri Ravanos.
Welcome to another edition of the Extra Magic Hour. I'm Dimitri.
And I'm Kat.
And Anne is off celebrating her birthday and did not want to be a part of it this week, so it's just the two of us, Kat. Let's jump on into the news.
Okay, so this first news story is kind of, it's a news story with a rumor attached to it.
Okay.
But I thought it was still interesting. So Festival of Fantasy, you know, it's the 3 o'clock parade, the one that everybody says, what time is the 3 o'clock parade? And, but changing on August 20th through the rest of the scheduled dates on the Disney website, the Festival of Fantasy Parade is now at 2 p.m.
Mm, and so what is the rumor attached to this?
The rumor attached to it is that there is finally a new nighttime parade coming to Magic Kingdom.
Ah, very good. So this certainly would. So how long does the 3 o'clock parade usually last how long to get from Main Street all the way over to Frontierland?
It's an hour.
Okay. So let's say then the 3 o'clock parade ends at 4. Usually we're talking the nighttime parade. The first running is at 8 o'clock, right?
Yes.
All right. So I guess this makes sense, particularly for the summer and the crowds that will come in for food and wine. I guess it makes sense to give yourself one more hour to clear the streets. I think this makes sense that this would probably be a sign that a new nighttime parade is on the way.
Well, and also, so the big rumor attached to it is that Paint the Night is coming, which I still don't know if that's, like, plausible, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what could happen is that these floats are going to be, like, the same size as the Festival of Fantasy floats, like the big ones.
Yeah.
And so they need more time to maneuver all the floats to where they need to be.
Yeah, it would certainly make sense. And also, you kind of have to wonder if, well, I guess along those lines, right? Maneuvering all the floats where they have to be. Do you have to allot time not only just to keep the floats off the street and get the street clean for the floats, but do you also have to allot time for, what do they call it? Do they call it the motor barn or the car barn? Whatever the facility is where they store the floats, if you're going to have two parades with these gigantic floats, do you need to space out when each set of floats is in the go position?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I know that was a long, complicated way of asking. But, it does seem like this makes sense. Moving it up an hour, especially at a time when you're going to be dealing with more crowds, it also gives people time to get out of that area, to get more done, particularly in that stretch between Liberty Square and Frontierland, so that then that becomes almost exclusively parade watchers at night.
Yeah, that's true, too.
All right, what else do we have in the news?
The next news story is that everybody was wondering if this was going to happen, and now it definitely is going to happen. You can create your own Avatar action figure at the, what's the,
Pandora.
The Wind Traders.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I was reading how it's done, and like, the first picture you show, it's like, oh, that kind of does look like the kid who's holding the avatar.
Yeah.
And then they explain to you how it's done. So they take your picture, and then after they take your picture, then you get to select your body style, and then your eye color, and then your facial striping pattern, and your hairstyle. And so I'm like, well, do they even use your picture then if you get to choose all this other stuff? But it does seem kind of cool. Or the experience seems really cool because apparently the technician who helps you create your avatar is gonna like gives you a bunch of like tidbits of how to make or like about the Na'vi. So apparently the Na'vi have naturally yellow eyes, so maybe that's what you want to go for, a more authentic looking avatar.
Right.
So I just thought that was kind of cool. And then of course they're going to try to get as much money out of you as possible, so they sell clothes for your action figure.
Oh, of course. Okay, so this is interesting. Any details about what the figure is going to be made out of? Is this going to be like just the goofy soft plastic kind of stuff like you get at old zoos, or is this like a full-on action figure very similar to what you buy like packaged?
Let me see. Well, it doesn't say what kind of material it's made out of, but it does come in its own authentic package.
Okay.
It says the packaging was inspired by the amino tank that is seen in the Avatar Flight of Passage queue.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a pretty cool package.
It doesn't say how much it is. And it says reservations are required for this experience.
So that was going to be the next thing I asked, is I wonder what the turnaround time on these things is. And I'm guessing if reservations are required, that means they are only capable of making a certain amount per day. Like, they're
yeah.
only capable of, like, doing a certain amount that they can guarantee will be done before park closing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is similar to the way they did the freeze yourself in carbonite a few years ago during Star Wars weekends, where you absolutely, like, there was absolutely no walk-up. You had to reserve weeks in advance before you even got to the park in order to get that. And I'm sure at least in the initial, well, no, maybe not. My gut says in the initial run-up, these will be super popular and spots will go quickly, but I kind of wonder, given how far removed we are from the Avatar movies, if this is something you could still walk up day of and get reservations for.
It does say that it's a first come, first serve basis.
Okay.
So I think you do have to walk up there for now, and maybe if it does get super popular, that's when it will be like, call to make a reservation.
Oh, so first come, first serve, do it in the park, not first come, first serve the way, say, like Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique is, where you
right.
just have to hope your date is still available.
Yeah, no, it's first come, first serve inside Wind Traders.
Crazy. Well, you know, yeah. I like that they are doing these things. Obviously, to a certain extent, they have to do these kind of things because of the popularity of Avatar versus the popularity of Harry Potter. I mean, Harry Potter has this huge built-in fan base that they can sell all these products. But I kind of like that it's pushing Disney to get very creative, not just with the ride and food offerings, but with the souvenir offerings as well.
Yeah, because I feel like those banshees are very popular, and even though I don't want one, it's still something that, like, I could totally see why it's appealing to other people.
Yeah, 100%.
And then this one, this is appealing to me, so I don't think I will buy one or get one, but it's still something I'm like, how cool would it be to have my own Avatar action figure?
All right, what else do we have in the news?
The next news story, it's kind of sad, but also funny, but in a bad way.
Okay.
As in a, I'm a terrible person, bad way. So last week, a 35-year-old man was arrested at Disney's Art of Animation Resort because he was arrested on child neglect. So, of course, there's a story behind it. The family... it doesn't say how many people were there or how many were in the family, but this family went to ESPN Wild World of Sports for a cheerleading competition. The father drank himself into a state of intoxication, and people complained at Art of Animation Resort. And when they arrived, when deputies arrived, they found his son had been sitting in a dirty diaper for hours, and his legs and feet were badly sunburned. Here's where it becomes funny. When the deputies were arresting him and putting him into the patrol car, apparently he was calling the deputies names, and he told the deputies that Donald Trump was going to kill them.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So this is, there's definitely a, I mean, look, you don't have to say it, right? There's something very sad about this story, but I don't think there's anything wrong with you for laughing at the tail end of that. I mean,
yes.
That is, because that's not even a political thing. That is a total drunk dude kind of thing.
Yes. Well, and then they updated this story, and the child actually just had eczema that worsened in the sun, like the redness was
yeah.
worsened in the sun. So it was not as bad as originally reported. And this is coming from the son's mother, but she said he did become angry with a couple who accused him of being an unfit father. So.
Well, that kind of stuff will tend to set you off a little bit, I think, even if deep down in your heart you know it's true.
Yes.
All right, anything else we have in the news?
We have our rumor this week.
Very good.
And this one is going back to President Trump. So we all know that Hall of Presidents is opening, I think it's this, or in June, sometime. And they said, or the rumor is that it's the Hall of Presidents is going back to what it was before Clinton, where only Abraham Lincoln and George Washington spoke.
Really?
Yes, and it's not necessarily for any political reasons.
Okay.
One of the reasons that they said is that apparently Disney has tried to contact Donald Trump and he is like either ignoring them or just like not doing it, does not want any, or has no interest in being speaking in the Hall of Presidents.
Okay. All right. Just fair warning, because I know our listeners don't always like this. Here comes whiny liberal Dimitri. What a jerk. Why can you not do this one thing that really, like, if this dude really is so obsessed with being beloved, this is one of the things that people look forward to with a new president. And I understand from, I mean, I don't know how much he and his advisors know about the history of the Hall of Presidents, but I guess I understand from Disney's point of view, right? Like, ever since the Clinton years, crowds have been less than reserved about the way they react to presidents they don't like in the lineup. So I can understand that maybe to a certain extent this is a little bit of a relief for the folks at Disney. But this just seems like, you know, they had this great new tradition going. Everybody from Clinton to Obama, and I get it's only three dudes, but everyone from Clinton to Obama participated in the your inauguration speech, or a clip from your inauguration speech for your character to do. This is just one of those things of, let me not do it because everybody else does it.
Yeah. Well, and then it goes on to say that Disney is possibly considering pushing back the opening in the fall so that they can get with President Trump's schedule.
So, yeah, it's
how long are you going to give President Trump to like respond back?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess it does. It's not insane, I guess, to wait till even as long as I guess the end of his first year. But you know, the way things are going, it's not unrealistic that he won't make it 4 years, and it's certainly not unrealistic that he won't be in there for 8 years. So at some point, don't you just kind of say, all right, well, we tried and he's not interested?
Yeah, I think so.
I also wonder too, because you know, Bob Iger, I'm sorry, I was thinking Michael Eisner. Bob Iger was supposed to be part of President Trump's like technology and business panel, advisory board, whatever, and attended one meeting and very quickly heard from a lot of people in Hollywood that actors would not work with Disney if he stayed on this panel. Now, you can say whatever you want to about that, whether it's manipulative or cruel or whatever, but I do wonder if the fact that that news got out and Bob Iger has conveniently, this is true, this is not an exaggeration, that he has conveniently had dentist appointments the days of the last two meetings, I wonder if that made President Trump decide that he's just not interested in scratching Disney's back if their CEO is not going to scratch his.
Maybe.
And if that's the case, I mean, look, it's completely up to him. I think that for a dude that wants to be loved, this is one of the things that people of all parties look forward to the new president doing, or at least I should say people of all parties that are also Disney fans.
I was going to say, wouldn't you want to be forever... I mean, I guess if you're not a Disney fan, but, like, wouldn't you want to be forever in a Disney attraction? Like, and even after your 4 years of being president, your voice kind of goes away, but maybe they'll bring it back eventually one day if you make significant changes to the country or something.
Think, even if you're listening and thinking, oh, gosh, I don't know that that's for me, wouldn't you think that dude would want that? I mean, doesn't everything about him scream that he would want to be immortalized in a Disney attraction?
Yes!
I mean, don't you think that if he had his way, he would ask to replace at least three of the country bears in that attraction?
Yes. I could sing better than all of those bears.
That's right. Bears, fake bears. Fake bears. Hashtag fake bears. All right. We have a round of moral obligation, which we have not done in quite some time. Thanks for listening to the Extra Magic Hour. Stick around.
Hey, everyone. It's Kat. We all know planning a Walt Disney World vacation takes a lot of time and effort. You gotta choose a resort, book dining, and choose fast passes. Well, I wanna take the stress out of your vacation. Book your vacation with me through Magical Travel and your trip planning will become as easy as pie. I'll take care of all the fine details for you at no additional cost. What's great about it is that you won't have to wake up early to get those hard to book reservations like Be Our Guest or Cinderella's Royal Table. I'll do my best to make your vacation the most fun and relaxing it can be. Even better, when you book a trip with me, I'll throw in a Disney gift card for you. Email me for a free quote at katarina@magicaltravel.com. That's K-A-T-A-R-I-N-A @magicaltravel.com. P.S. I also do all other Disney affiliates, so if you want to venture outside of the world, I will be able to help you there too. So what are you waiting for? Let's make your next trip magical.
All right, this is a game we have not played in a long time. It's called Moral Obligation. Both of us come to the table with three questions about what Disney owes to, whether you want to say its fans, its investors, its whatever. We ask the question, does Disney have a moral obligation to do blank in their parks? So, like I said, it's been a while since we've played this game. Hopefully, after we go back and forth a time or two, you will get how this works. Kat, do you want to start or do you want me to?
I can start because my questions are never as good as yours. So we'll always end with the great question.
Okay, sounds good.
So we all know or suspect an overhaul of Epcot is coming. And this overhaul just has me thinking. Now, obviously, it's not going to be originally what Walt wanted Epcot to be. Like, it's not going to be a community. It's always going to be a theme park.
Right.
But with, like, these overhauls, the question I have is, should Disney always be in line with Walt's original vision of the theme parks, or should they just make decisions based on a business standpoint?
Okay, so I think they have an obligation to their stockholders to make decisions based on business standpoint, but you bring up an interesting question because I think we always forget, or we always romanticize Walt in a way that we forget he was a notoriously awful businessman. I think we forget that what we know as Disney would not exist if not for Roy.
Right.
I hate to just default to saying, oh, they always have to make the best business decision, but I just got done reading the book Disney War, which is all about Michael Eisner's time in charge of the Walt Disney Company and just sort of what a crazy person he was. But that era when Walt's son-in-law, Ron Miller, is in charge of the company, and the uphill battle he had to fight against guys like Card Walker that worked on the parks with Walt about things like charging more than $15 for a ticket in the mid to late 80s, like, it's mind-boggling. Or, I'm sorry, the mid to late 70s. It's mind-boggling that for so long the company just undervalued itself in such an astounding way. I mean, I don't want to say just throw out everything Walt wanted to do, but, you know, let's be real here. Walt is dead and has been dead for a long time.
I agree to a point. Like, I think Toy Story Land and Star Wars Land is exactly what Walt would have seen happening in the future. Like,
yes, I agree.
Not necessarily like Star Wars Land or like buying all these different like movie or franchises, but one of his quotes is like, as long as there's imagination in the world, our work will never be done.
Right.
And so I think bringing in Toy Story Land is perfect because this is a movie franchise that he didn't get to see, but it has been very successful. So, of course, this imagination is now going into the parks. But I totally forget where I was going from that. But
go ahead.
I was going to say, I do agree with you. Like, Walt was a terrible businessman. One thing I wish that they would do, though, is Walt, when he opened Disneyland, he wanted to make the theme park affordable for everyone.
Sure.
And so I kind of wish that they would still go back to that. Like, we are very lucky that we are able to go to Disney World as much as we are.
Like, yes, absolutely. And I also, when I say that the prices they were charging were mind-bogglingly low, that is also accepting that right now what they charge is mind-bogglingly high. There has to be some sort of middle ground there. Yeah, what you're saying about, you know, Walt's quote about as long as there's imagination, our job will never be done. I think that when you hear about the like just the striking detail, I guess, of Pandora, when you hear about what they have in Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley over in Universal, that seems to me more the spirit of Walt than we have to keep Peter Pan's flight around in its original form, right?
Yeah,
like, it seems to me if Walt were, let's say Walt were some sort of immortal being that will always be here with us, like literally would physically always be here with us, I cannot imagine him riding Peter Pan's flight and being happy that his name is on that.
Well, and see, the thing is, Peter Pan's Flight was popular when it was opened, because that's like, that was as much as they could do. And I remember when I took a tour, when I did the Keys to the Kingdom tour, they talked about the Tiki Room. We didn't go inside it, but like one of the things was Walt watched the show, and then he was like, "The birds need to breathe." And so like, those were like the little nitpicking like details that he paid attention to. And so then you have all these immersive things like Pandora, and you're right, that is definitely something that Walt would have like seen through.
Well, right, like when you think about the queue for Flight of Passage, and you have the Na'vi in the big tube there, and everybody, what they're walking away impressed by is the fact that, you know, this is not a big animated character, but he is, you can see him breathing, and you can see his fingers move as he's in this state of suspended animation to make it look like someone who is dreaming. That's the kind of stuff that a guy with that kind of imagination would insist upon. And so I don't think things have to stick to Walt's original vision, but I also don't think if Walt were here, he would be a stickler for, I thought of it this way in 1955 or this way in 1960, whatever, when they're planning the Florida project, so this is the way it has to stay.
Right. I agree with you.
Okay, so I was going to do this as my second one, but mine is also about the coming overhaul of Epcot, so we'll just skip right to it. Does Disney have a moral obligation? This might sort of be the same question, but I don't think it's exactly it. Does Disney have a moral obligation to keep Epcot grounded in some form of science or at the very least reality?
That's a hard question.
So it is, because I waffle on this one.
Because I love the way Epcot is. Well, I love the concept, I should say.
Sure.
I love Future World, and this is how the world can be. And then World Showcase, and this is how the world is.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we go back to how Future World is outdated. And how it looks like a cheap 1980s movie about the future.
Ooh, right.
So I think, I don't know. I still think that there should be some sort of science to it, just because I feel like at almost every single Disney park, there is something you can learn. Like Animal Kingdom is all about animals, and Hollywood Studios, well, it used to be how to make movies, and then I guess everything's changing, so maybe not.
Well, so,
I don't know. I keep on contradicting myself.
So here's what I keep coming back to, because I, like you, like I 100% see the argument for both sides, but I think the reason that I say, yes, they do have a moral obligation to keep it in the realm of, at the very least, reality, right? Not everything has to be about science. If you wanted to do a whole park of stuff very similar to, say, Soarin', that's fine, but it does need to be grounded in some sort of realities, because I think, going back to what we're talking about how absurdly and obscenely expensive it is for a park for a single day, I think Disney does have an obligation to, if you're going to have three parks, and if you're going to be charging $100, or in the Magic Kingdom's case, over $100 a day to go in, you have an obligation to make sure those are four very different experiences.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
So I would say also, okay, also, again, not saying that things have to stick to the way Walt envisioned them, but I feel like with living with the land and with the whole land pavilion, there is this opportunity for Disney to creatively and in a fun way engage and educate people about what the realities of the future can be. And I don't know that they necessarily have a moral obligation, like a concrete moral obligation, to keep that the case, but I think that it would be a real shame if they moved away from that. Like, if let's say they did do what we had talked about last week or a couple weeks ago, and Cars Land was going to be a big part of the future of Epcot, that just does not seem to jive with how cool they make science seem in the Land Pavilion.
That's true. Because, like, the living with the land, I really like going through that because it's so, like, I don't know. Like, I don't consider myself, like, a huge agricultural person. But I think it's cool to see that this is how Disney grows their food. And right. This is the food that you could possibly eat next time you're here.
No, I agree with you. And I think there is, I'll get into this in another question I have, because it sort of leads in to something else I have. But it, I think, is the one pavilion, not only in Epcot, but let's combine Epcot and also Tomorrowland. That is the one glimpse of the realistic future that we get in either of these lands. Because we are coming to this spot, even if it's not about global warming, we are coming to this spot in terms of population, the way people are spreading out, that this is going to be how we are not going to always grow our food, but we're going to have to know how to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you will pick it up just from riding that ride, but to see it in action is very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
What you're saying.
What else do you have?
Okay, so obviously Pandora opened on Saturday. Did you hear about, like, any of the craziness that was going on?
No, I heard that it opened. Oh, you know what? I made a note of this. I forgot to say it. I heard that it opened without actually opening at night, which made me think we must have gotten an email from a cast member saying that you have to see it at night. That must be a cast member listening to the show.
Huh.
But anyway, that's all I heard, is that it opened without actually opening for nighttime previews.
That's weird. Well, there were a couple of travel agents with Magical Travel who were down there this week. Uh-huh. And then, of course, like, on all the discussion boards, people were posting about it. So it was like a 5 to 6 hour wait time just to get inside.
Wow.
Pandora. Not including the rides, which were also 5 to 6 hour wait times. The owner of Magical Travel was down there, and she said that, so she got like a special preview. And she said that she walked through the queue of Flight of Passage, but she didn't ride it. And walking through the queue, it can easily hold a 5 hour wait time, just that queue.
Wow.
Not including, like, a line outside, like how Frozen was. Obviously when Disney opens something like this, they are going to expect big crowds. Do you think in the future for Toy Story Land and Star Wars Land, do you think there is going to be a way to limit wait times for, like, when these new areas open? Or do you think they have a moral obligation to figure out how to dispense people?
Yeah,
so that...
I think they have an obligation in a big way to make sure that if you're doing these things... All right, so you have an obligation not only to actually do what you're promising, which is create magic for your guests, but you have an obligation to these people that have paid thousands, if not in some cases tens of thousands of dollars for this vacation, to have a pleasant experience in what it is they are coming to see.
Yeah.
Like a 5 to 6 hour wait just to get into Pandora, that makes me feel like there is no way you could walk comfortably in that land.
I don't think you could. like, I can't imagine just going through security and then just stopping and waiting in line to go up towards Pandora. Like,
right.
It that just, like, boggles my mind. And I was talking to my mom about it, and she's like, I don't think I would ever do that, no matter what land it was. Like, I don't care if they open up Disney Princess for Adult Land. I don't think I could wait 5 hours, because that's wasting half my day.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and look, we keep coming back to the subject of ticket prices, but if you're paying that much, and this is the one thing you want to see, and I understand, like, there is no realistic way Disney can move things any faster, given the way they had things set up right now, right? But maybe if beforehand they gave you a ticket and said, this is your day to come to Pandora, or like they were doing with the pass holder previews and say of saying, this is your time window that you can be in Pandora.
Yeah. And I think, or like you can choose or like rank the time. These are the times we want to be there. I don't know. But I really think that because of the way Pandora was, they need to figure something out for Star Wars, because you know that is going to be, like, it's going to be awesome, but it's going to be a mess if it's anything.
I'm sure, like, that they are either watching or already are putting out feelers to the members of Universal Creative that created the new Jimmy Fallon ride and created the new system for Volcano Bay that is completely quote-unquote lineless. You know, everything you get a time to come back. I'm sure they are watching to see how that goes over the next year, because you're right. Like, if you were talking about 5 to 6 hours to get into Pandora, granted, this is opening weekend. This is the first time most people saw it, but you're talking about two, not just one, but two franchises that are infinitely more popular, right? Two lands that infinitely more people have been waiting their whole lives to see brought to life.
Yeah. Even just the one. Like, I mean, I love the Toy Story franchise, and I'm not, like, the biggest Star Wars fan, but to be honest, I think I'm more excited for the Star Wars land than I am Toy Story.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, Anne and I love Star Wars, and I am already anticipating having to explain to my children why Daddy can't stop crying. You know, I mean, everything you've seen about it is astounding, right? And they are doing, Disney is doing a great job of building anticipation for this. I think they have an obligation not just to fans or to investors, right? They have an obligation to themselves to make sure everybody walks away singing the praises of this.
Complaining about the 5 hour wait time.
Right. There's so again, going back to that book Disney War, Michael Eisner had this theory, and I think this is probably something they're going to be dealing with here over the next few months with Pandora, that if somebody has a great time, they go home and tell, I'm sorry, this is Walt that has this theory. If someone has a great time, they go home and tell 3 people about it. If they have a terrible time, they go home and tell 10 people about it. So you kind of have to really make sure, especially with something like Star Wars Land, that you are limiting as many of those telling 10 people guests that you create. Does that make sense?
Yes, I get what you're saying.
Okay. All right, so my next one also has to do with something brand new. Disney just launched Mission Breakout, the new Guardians of the Galaxy ride at California Adventure. Our buddy Josh Taylor over at Network 1901 reported the other day that I believe this was the third day the ride was open, that the line to get into Mission Breakout by 10 a.m. stretched all the way to the front entrance of California Adventure. This is certainly something that people are taking a look at videos online, knowing that either they don't live anywhere near California Adventure, they are not going to get there anytime soon. When you launch something like that, does Disney have a moral obligation to launch it, maybe not at every park around the world, but at least at both of the U.S. parks?
I say no.
Okay.
And this is the reason. I feel like Disneyland is getting more, or Disneyland and Disney World are becoming more and more separate. Like becoming their own parks. Like, mm-hmm. Of course they are their own parks, but I hope that makes sense the way I said that. Like, I feel like Disneyland, they are trying to make Sorry, I'm like really trying to figure out how to say this. They're really trying to make them their own separate parks.
Sure.
And not just, oh, come to Disneyland where you can experience Big Thunder Mountain, but it's different, and Space Mountain, but it's different, and Haunted Mansion, but it's different. I feel like they are trying to make them their own thing so that you do want to go there just to experience the different rides, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you in the overall of what you said, but I do feel like if you're talking about something like Mission Breakout, which people are raving about as one of, people are talking about that rocket animatronic the same way they're talking about the Navi Shaman animatronic in the river adventure.
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of stuff, maybe you don't have a moral obligation, but as a company, you should want to show that off everywhere you possibly can. And maybe they would tell you, well, we are showing that off on both coasts. We're showing it off with Pandora in Florida, and we're showing it off with Guardians of the Galaxy in California. But I feel like you really are missing out by limiting something that is that technologically advanced to not only just one park, but to the park that is far less popular.
Well, and that's another thing. I think that's a business decision, too. Well, I don't know. I have a really hard time, too, just because Tower of Terror is one of my favorite rides. And
sure.
I know it's essentially the same ride, just a different story. And I
understand
that.
Well, but the story is part of what makes Tower of Terror so special.
That's why I love Tower of Terror so much, is, like, that storyline. And I love every time the light goes off and we're like, bum, bum, bum. But I'm just a nerd like that. So
well,
I think that's why I have a hard time saying, yes, you need Mission Breakout everywhere except Disney World, because I feel like that's just contradicting myself.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the thing that I think gets overlooked a lot, and I'm not advocating getting rid of Tower of Terror. I think the thing that gets overlooked a lot is the way Tower of Terror was viewed in Florida versus the way it's viewed really at every other park it's in, or I should say in California and Paris, because I know they've done very much their own thing with it in the parks in Asia. But, you know, in California and certainly in Paris, it is not as beloved because it has this feel of being thrown up quickly and being thrown together because it is so popular in Florida. Whereas Florida, it is one of the icons, I guess technically now, right? It is the icon of the studios, but it is figuratively one of the icons, one of the iconic attractions now.
Yes. And that's how I feel about it too. And so that's why when the rumors were that Tower of Terror in Florida was getting overlaid too. And at that point, I wasn't a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan, but after watching the second movie, I'm like a much bigger fan than I was before.
Right. And now that you know Baby Groot is part of the ride.
What? No, he isn't. Oh my gosh, we gotta go to California. Baby Groot is literally my favorite thing in the world right now.
He is quite adorable. My daughter sleeps with a Baby Groot.
Oh my gosh. This is totally off topic, but that's okay. I just gotta say this. There were just some parts where I was just like, oh my gosh, he's just like one of my babies in my classroom.
Did you stay past the credits to see Teenage Groot?
Yes! And my first thought was, no, he can't grow up! And like, I was cracking up during the credits, so.
It does make me wonder. This is the last thing we'll say about Guardians of the Galaxy, so we can get on to our final questions. It does make me wonder if they are going to keep killing off Groot to keep bringing back Baby Groot as this series goes on.
Oh my gosh. I just feel, I don't know. I would love for that to happen, but at the same time, it would be awful. It'd be like Kenny every South Park episode.
Right. All right, what is your last one?
My last one, okay, so we had that story about the father who was arrested.
Yes.
And people complaining about alcohol, or about him, his alcohol intake. So my question is, and this is the one that I'm not sure if we've talked about before, should there be a limit on alcohol purchased at the park by one person?
Have we talked about this? Does feel familiar, but I don't know if this is just something that we've talked about in passing or if we've actually done this as a moral obligation. Either way, my stance is 100% yes, because I know that things like Drink It Around the World at Epcot is something that people go to the parks to do, But it's also part of the reason that at least my family doesn't go to World Showcase after dark. Like, it's just a, you know what? I'll remember to put a bleep here because there's no other way to describe it. It's just a show. at that point, particularly food and wine. I mean, it is, it's not enjoyable. And you cannot let people do this kind of stuff at the expense of tens of thousands of others.
Right. And I completely agree. And like, I was trying to think of how could Disney do this? And I feel like there's enough technology in the world where they would be able to figure out a way. Like, if it's by your magic band, like, you have to scan your magic band every time you buy alcohol, like, sure. Regardless if that's how you do it. But like, it's not just at the parks. I also think at your resort too, like at every bar by the pool, I think that there should be a limit because I mean, alcohol and swimming is not always a great mix. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so I agree with the principle. I think when you are at your resort, when you're near your room, especially when you're at the pool, pools that are constantly patrolled by lifeguards, I feel like that's a little bit different. I hear what you're saying, though. Like, everything you're saying is a very sound argument. Right. I just feel like there's a big difference in the parks. Which, I mean, look, let's be honest, right? Like, as much as we enjoy the parks as adults, as much as there are things about the parks to enjoy as an adult, the idea of an amusement park is meant for kids and for the family audience. And I'm sorry, like, I just cannot reconcile sloppy drunkenness being okay.
Well, and, like, that's the thing, too. And, like, when I was a kid, and even now, I'm, like, oblivious to things going on around me. But, like, I can't imagine, like, when I was a kid, if my parents, like, saw or heard something and, like, were worried about me hearing that and then, like, maybe repeating it or, like, being like, oh, why are they acting like that? I want to act like – I want to get chocolate wasted.
I think we all just found the I Want to Get Chocolate Wasted. That'll be the name of this week's episode.
like, I don't know. I just feel like you're right, Dimitri. Like, you're in a family environment. So, I mean, I guess you don't have to censor what you say because it's free speech. But it's still like you got to censor somehow.
Okay, but hang on. So you bring up something that I feel like is very important here to remind people, especially people that vehemently disagree with us. And I understand there are those out there that think we are, however you want to say it, sticks in the mud, tight asses, whatever it is you want to say. It's not freedom of speech because you are on private property. As much as Disney World is meant for everybody, it is private property controlled by a private corporation. They can do what they want.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And they do. Look, again,
they have rules.
Exactly, they have rules. And at the end of the day, even if you don't think they have a moral obligation to families, they do have an obligation to their stockholders, right? And mm-hmm. and if again, I keep coming back to food and wine. Like, there is just food and wine. My family, we love it, but we will only go lunchtime during the week because any other time, it's really unpleasant.
Yeah.
All right, last one I have for you along the lines of food. Do you know how much food Disney throws out or would throw out every day? Every year. I'm sorry, not every day.
No, but I can imagine it's ginormous because even with the dining plan, you waste so much food.
Yeah, 350 tons of food per year.
My gosh.
That's what they would throw away. Disney does have deals with a couple of local food banks where most of that food gets donated every year. Does Disney have a moral obligation to keep that relationship alive?
This is just the green person, eco-friendly person in me. I think so. Like, if they're... I mean, I guess I don't know exactly all the foods that they would throw away. Obviously, they're not going to dig up trash,
right.
Dig up out of the trash and see a half-eaten sandwich and donate that. But I have seen Chopped episodes where they have, like, the stuff that you throw away and, like, the chefs make something out of it. So I think it's definitely possible, or I think it's definitely important to use as much, because Disney takes in so much, Yeah. They need to figure out a way to expand it as much as they can.
I agree with you. I don't think you have to qualify it at all, right? Like, Florida wooed Disney to come build this park there by giving them all kinds of crazy tax incentives and powers as their own municipality. They don't even have to follow the same laws that other businesses in Central Florida do. Other Central Florida businesses do. That's how I'm trying to say it.
Yeah.
You have been given so many breaks to build this empire. You absolutely have a moral obligation to be a good corporate citizen of that area. And if you can't afford to feed the homeless 350 tons of food every year, you better damn well do it.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, we agree.
Yes.
All right. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap things up in just a second on the Extra Magic Hour. Oh, by the way, before we go, if you ever want to throw out a moral obligation question to us, please do via email, emhpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, now stay tuned for more of the Extra Magic Hour.
Hello, I'm Storybook Julius, the White Dragon Podcast Network's resident Canadian and the host of Storybook Radio, a Walt Disney World and Universal Studios podcast appearing every Wednesday here on WDPN. Walt Disney was a storyteller, and well, so am I. Now, I'm not saying that I'm as cool as Walt Disney or anything, but I'm saying that if you're looking for a unique take on the Walt Disney World and Universal Studios theme parks, with immersive looks at their stories, backstories, and histories, you've come to the right place. Head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podomatic to subscribe to and download the Storybook Radio podcast each and every Wednesday. You can also check out www.storybookradio.com for more details and more content.
Hey folks, Kevin Kessler from the White Dragon Podcast Network here. One of the questions I get asked all the time is, Kevin, I want to have a podcast, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about audio equipment. I don't know anything about editing. I don't know anything about how to post and promote a podcast. Well, folks, you are in luck, because what if I told you there is a way you can have your podcast with minimal effort from you and still be a part of the White Dragon Podcast Network, joining the family of 9 all-star podcasts that are already broadcasting 7 days a week here on WDPN. For a free consultation, please send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com, and I will tell you personally how we can take care of everything from the production to the editing to the posting to the server space to promotion of your podcast. I want to welcome you into the White Dragon Podcast Network family, so please drop me a line, kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. I look forward to welcoming you into the White Dragon Podcast Network.
The Extra Magic Hour's just about over.
Aww.
But first, it's time for the glorious 3-hour finale.
All right, just about to put the wraps on this week's show, but Kat, you and I were talking about the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie before we got started recording tonight. You said you have not seen it yet, correct?
Right. And so, I probably won't see it until it's in the dollar theater.
That is probably the way to go. You could still find my review up at the 2 Minute and Mouse Facebook page, or go to WRAL Out and About. That's the local NBC affiliate here in Raleigh that I review movies for. I didn't loathe it, but I didn't like it. But one of the things that did strike me about it is we get more action in a Caribbean port town. And so I'm not going to do a moral obligation here. I'm going to ask, considering that this is the 5th movie of this franchise, the new director claims that it is not going to be the last movie. It just might be the last one that Johnny Depp is in. Do you want to see them continue to bring elements of these movies to the ride?
Probably not. Because, so the original Curse of the Black Pearl was like based on the ride.
Right.
And then after the success of that, that's when they did the overlay with Captain Jack Sparrow. And so I think they just did that in 2004, five, something like that.
Wasn't, Yeah, I think it was 5 or 6, right? Because it was much closer to the release of Dead Man's Chest that all that stuff came into the rides.
Yeah, and so, like, I feel like that is a very recent update. Unless it, like, blows us out of the water, I don't think so. Just because Curse of the Black Pearl was so different from any other pirate movie we had seen in, like, forever. Mm-hmm. And so that's what made it so successful. Not necessarily all the acting in the I guess the story is kind of part of, like, what made it phenomenal. But, you know, like, it was just so well done that that's what made it successful, not necessarily the characters, I guess.
Well, I think by comparison to the last 4 movies, characters did play a big role in Curse of the Black Pearl. At least Jack Sparrow did, because there was, and this has been my criticism of all the pirate movies 2 through 5, there's nothing to root for about Jack Sparrow anymore. Jack Sparrow has kind of turned into Homer Simpson, in that any victory is him falling backwards into victory. Whereas in Curse of the Black Pearl, yes, he was drunk. Yes, he was sort of a flouncing, non-macho character, but he was conniving, right? Like, he was conniving in a way he's just not anymore. Like, there were times that he was, despite appearances, the smartest guy in the room, right? I would like to see stuff brought in from the movies if it meant we got a version of the ride like is in Hong Kong.
Okay, yeah. I can agree with that.
And I think for people that have not yet seen it, or even people that have, like, I do think the Salazar character, the effects that create that character would work with the mist screens. But I do feel like with the mist screens in particular are just this way of shoehorning new characters into that ride.
See, I liked it better when it was just Davy Jones. Like, I don't like that Blackbeard is still one of the characters in there. Because, well, I didn't really like the 4th movie anyway, which is why I'm not really keen on going to see the 5th one.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just feel like,
all the villains except for Barbossa really just don't fit with what's going on in the ride, which is why I feel like those mist screens of both Davy Jones and Blackbeard, they just sort of shoehorned in, like, hey, remember these guys, or hey, we have who played Blackbeard, Ian McShane. We have Ian McShane under contract to do this as well, so we're gonna, you know, get the most out of him. I do think that technology though really lends itself to ghosts, which Salazar and his crew are. But I don't know that you can do a whole lot of what's gone on in the movies in the context of the ride anymore, because it's they're completely separate stories.
Like, maybe I just don't remember the original Pirates, but, like, I feel like a lot, like, there are just a couple of scenes that they really changed, because, like, the town scene where they're auctioning off the brides, I know that's what the character Scarlet and that blonde girl from the first one, that's what they were based on. And then the dog in the jail cell, that's what that was based on. But wasn't there always a pirate singing Yo-ho, yo-ho, Pirate's Life for Me in the jail? Or was I just making that up?
Well, I mean, the jail scene is right after the whole town singing Yo-ho, a Pirate's Life for Me. I don't remember a particular pirate singing it. I do know the first pirate we run across in the ride singing it is the one with the cats, right? I can't remember which comes first, the cats or the pigs. But whichever one of those guys comes first is the first one we hear singing that song, and that's what shows up in the movie. I think you've never been to Disneyland, right?
Nope, unfortunately.
Curse of the Black Pearl is 100% based on the Disneyland version. Like,
oh, okay.
And I didn't realize that until we went in 2015, like, how much of the Disneyland version is Curse of the Black Pearl. But yeah, at this point, honestly, just as a fan of that first movie, at this point, just kill the damn series, please.
Well, I think, like, I know you said you didn't really like the second or third movie, but I think the third movie, like, ended the series so well, especially with the after scene. Like, you saw Will came back for that one day, and then that was it.
Sure. I mean, and to me, that's why I like the fourth one better than the second and third one, is because the second and third one had become so bogged down by the love triangle storyline, which made no sense based on the way these characters were introduced in the first one.
I agree. with that.
So yeah, I mean, like you got a bow on it. You got this sense of finality of, at the very least, we're done with Will and Kate, or Will and Elizabeth. Yeah, Will and Kate are the actual prince and princess, right? yeah, like you got this sense that we are at the very least done with Will and Elizabeth. And so yeah, but you know, to that same point, like yeah, so I'm sort of thinking about Blackbeard being in the mist curtain. People are not going to remember number 4.
Yeah, no.
At all. People are just not going to remember. I can't even remember what the subtitle of it was now. Was that at World's End?
No, at World's End was the third one. What was the fourth one? All I know is that Blackbeard had a daughter, and then Blackbeard died at the end for some reason. Someone killed him.
Right, and mermaids eat people in that one.
Yes, and Sam Clayfin had to save the mermaid.
Oh, God bless him. So handsome. All right, that is going to do it for us this week, I guess.
Yeah. Bye!